about a chain stitcher that you know of that was making a lot of money, which made me start to consider, like, maybe am I doing something wrong? Am I the problem? and I was a little bit. I don't think I wasn't too far off, but I wasn't doing anybody any favors.
Welcome to Voices of the Gig Economy. I'm your host today, Jared Spackler. In this episode, I had the opportunity to speak to an artist living in Los Angeles about her experience navigating the insecurity of life as an artist and a couple of strategies through which she sought to provide a balance of meaningful work and enough income. In one such strategy, my guest begins to elaborate on a compelling area of future study within precarious work, informal collective organizing within niche communities of gig workers. Thanks for joining. Let's get into it. Morning, Hillary. Can you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Hillary Quartz. I am an artist and I work in chain stitch embroidery. So I use a vintage chain stitch embroidery machine, all hand operated, to decorate clothing and make wall pieces and that kind of thing.
How long have you been doing this for?
Started working on my machine pretty regularly, practicing at the beginning of 2017 or like mid 2017. And I started my business in April of 2018, beginning of 2018. So professionally since April 2018.
What were you doing before chain stitching?
Before that, many other gigs. I was working in photography. I worked in the service industry just prior to starting my business. I was working on costumes on a TV show in Chicago, and then I took some time off to go to Mexico and practice chain stitching.
Did you ever have any positions that offered you benefits other than just your wage?
I worked for Live Nation for a period of time and had part-time health insurance through them. And I worked for Blue Bottle Coffee for a year and had full-time benefits through them, which was health insurance, paid time off, vacation days.
Did having those benefits make it easier or harder to do the work you were interested in?
Well, harder because I had to work at least 28 hours a week, but was working like 40 in order to pay my bills and have health insurance, and then could only work on art in my free time, but free time is really limited when you also have like a new dog and that kind of thing.
What was your reasoning in holding these other jobs in the midst of your photography work?
Well, I always had to have another kind of job while trying to make it as a photographer, because the work in photography, the industry that I was working in, specifically music, is not guaranteed and very hard to come by and low paying, unless you get to a certain level. But the level that I was at was mostly hustle for very little pay, so it wasn't sustainable in terms of like living in New York City and paying your bills. I would daydream about not having another job in order to spend all of my time on art, but that didn't really ever feel super realistic at the time.
Had you ever considered or looked for in-house position doing the kind of art you like to do?
Yes, depending on what I was required to do for them, and if there was any kind of non-competition sort of agreement, like, am I allowed to take other work from other companies or private commissions or any of that.
When did you finally transition out of holding another job?
6 months after I started my business and started actually working in LA, I worked 5 total shifts in a box office at a music club before I remembered that I didn't want to do that anymore. And I also had this other side gig sewing like passport covers and checkbook covers for this little company that sells their stuff on Zazzle. And I realized in November that year that it was costing me more to get myself to that job and do that job than it would if I quit that job and only took commission work and events work with my embroidery.
Considering how challenging it was for you to make ends meet as a photographer, how do you account for your success as a chain stitcher owning your own business?
Once I stepped back and realized that, you know, like the label I need to have, if I need to have a label, is artist and not photographer, because I've been doing making art all of my life without necessarily acknowledging that it is such, or, you know, without saying like, well, this is what I'm doing forever. But you'll notice I introduced myself as an artist working in chain stitch embroidery because, I mean, I am still a photographer. I do still take pictures. It's just not like my financial focus. So once I was able to adjust my mindset that way, it bothers me less. but I think it's a lot of it has to do with the sheer number of people doing the art and trying to make a living or taking the jobs. I know of, you know, a handful of chain stitchers based in Los Angeles and another handful of chain stitchers based in Texas and another handful in New York. And there are more now than there were when I started, and the price of machines is going up, and, you know, there are definitely more people getting involved because it is cool and kind of having a resurgence. But I think it's still niche enough that everybody has their own kind of style. And I think depending on what you're looking for, you can go to specific chain stitchers, which isn't to say that isn't the case with photography, but there are more photographers to choose from, and there's always somebody willing to do it for less. I think that happens across all mediums, to be fair, but less to choose from, I guess. The whole everybody is a photographer thing really applies here because, yes, you can search for the kind of machine that I have and purchase it, but you don't just sit down and start. Like, I mean, you do just sit down and start, but you don't just sit down and start by making amazing things. Like, everybody's first pieces are total trash because there's a larger learning curve.
What's the greatest benefit now of working for yourself, despite the challenges of your work being a little more insecure?
Flexibility. I mean, I know how to, I try to keep a pretty regular schedule anyway on my own. partially because my partner has a pretty regular schedule, like 9 to 5. So I like to be available when he's available. But it's more like the flexibility. I guess I'm not super worried about the flexibility with my time because I do keep a pretty regular schedule. However, the flexibility to work for several people is really nice to me. I like being able to be hired by different companies, and also I am in charge of my workload. So if I feel like I have too much on my plate, I can say no to stuff. And if I really don't want to do a certain project, I feel that I am in a position most of the time to be like, no, not for me, but check out this other person, or, you know, I don't have time, or whatever excuse I need to make. Like, I don't like your project, I don't want to do it.
What information did you use to decide how to structure your rates as you got started?
The first couple of people that I reached out to when I first started gave me the answer of, like, you have to decide what your work is worth, which was kind of, like, I understand, but super, like, protective of a price for whatever reason, I guess because we've all been taught not to talk about how much we make. But my original, like, events price came from someone in the fashion industry who was like, you know, you could be charging larger amounts of money. Like, she was being a pal and letting me know, because I moved to LA with my machine and she hired me for an event, and I was like, cool, give me $250 for the day. And she was like, that's really affordable. And then after she hired me for another event where I didn't charge very much, she sat down with me and said, you know, you're supposed to be charging more. And I said, no, I didn't know. This is all new to me. So she let me know that I needed, like, a much higher hourly rate. But it wasn't until I listened to a podcast that one of the chain stitchers who doesn't acknowledge my presence did. And he was talking about people not charging enough. And so I sent him a message and I said, what do you charge? And he told me. And I was like, okay, cool. And actually, you told me about a chain stitcher that you know of that was making a lot of money, which made me start to consider, like, maybe, am I doing something wrong? Am I the problem? And I was a little bit, I wasn't too far off, but, I wasn't doing anybody any favors. But so I reached out to that chain stitcher and I asked him, and he told me, and I said, okay, cool. And then we talked about the difference between, like, that high rate for a corporate brand that can afford it versus if a small boutique hits you up, you know, being flexible, and you have to sort of decide, like, where you want to compromise or what it's worth to you. Like, I will work with small women-owned businesses for half my rate because it's something that I believe in and want, those are the people that I want to collaborate with, versus if I know it's a giant company that has a ton of money, they can pay me top dollar because they have it.
Is it simply the fact that there's less competition in chain stitching as opposed to photography that allows for you to make this a sustainable living?
There is competition, for sure. But there's been, I guess there's been a little bit more conversation amongst chain stitchers than I really remember there being amongst photographers, in terms of, like, we need to kind of get on the same page as far as what we're charging for the same services, because if we all charge $25 for a monogram, then that's industry standard and there's no room to wiggle. But if somebody wants to come on the scene and start charging $15 per monogram, then every time someone emails me like, hey, I want a monogram, and I say, cool, it's $25, they go, well, why does this person charge 15? I can get it for, you know, from this person for 15. Okay. So
interesting. Is this informal organizing unique to chain stitching?
It feels like there's a little bit more respect amongst other chain stitchers than there was amongst photographers, because, and maybe it's a different time and we, you know, they are talking about how much they charge now, but I remember never knowing what to charge and having really no one to turn to or feeling like it was weird to talk about. Whereas now I have hit up several chain stitchers to be like, hey, what are you charging for this thing that we all do the same? And it's however much an hour. And then I know that, oh, I was charging too little and I was the jerk, you know, so I knew to raise my prices. And similarly, when other people reach out to me and ask like, hey, what, you know, nobody's published rates anywhere. It's very hard to figure out what anybody is charging for anything. So at the very least, I want to know what's your, what is our base? Where should we start from? And then, you know, like I can decide how much my stuff is worth. But if we're doing the exact same thing, let's have an industry standard so that we're not all just like messing with each other's income. Cause there's enough work to go around. I don't really feel myself like pitted up against anybody at any point. Versus like when I would be in the photo pit at a concert, you're there with all of your direct competition. You're like looking at all the other people that are making all the same pictures as you, like, get out of my way, I need that angle. That's not super fun all the time, especially when someone just stands in the same spot.
Is this informal collective organizing specific to events?
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's hard to have any kind of uniform pricing across the board in terms of commissions, because that's sort of all about how much you value your own work and your own style. But events are pretty much everybody taking their machine somewhere, sitting down and stitching on site, be it monograms on jackets or, you know, whatever the company who's hired you is offering as their thing to be stitched. So that, yeah, I would say that that's where the need for a uniform plan of attack comes in, because if large brands that have the money to pay us what our time is worth find someone who's newer or greener or whatever, and they're willing to charge half of what we charge, then we're never going to get hired.
Now that you're more plugged into the industry, are you able to return the favor for new or younger chain stitchers coming in?
Once I had another chain stitcher who was newer at the time reach out and ask me what I charged a specific brand, because I had worked with this brand several times and she knew that, and they contacted her to do work in her city. And so I told her, this is what I have been charging them. Like, you definitely shouldn't charge anybody less than that. And she said, thank you. And then later, a year or so later, I found out that we're supposed to be charging even more.
It's pretty cool that the community of chain stitchers informally work together to kind of protect their work and their rates and their industry. Is there anybody who doesn't play nice?
There's like a small group of like dude chain stitchers who are like, it's got a real like cool guys man's club vibe to it, and they don't acknowledge my work or follow me on Instagram or anything. And one of them, who seems like a real pill of a human anyway, so to each his own, he will post like screenshots of emails that he gets from a brand that says like, well, you know, we only have this budget, or, you know, can you compromise on your price? And he's like, this is crap. Like, chain stitchers who are, you know, doing this for less, like, charge more, like, you're ruining this. There was a job that I did once that I know I took from him, and it was it was like a last summer when things were slow and I really needed the work. This guy hit me up for a run of sweatshirts, and he needed them a very fast turnaround. So I said, okay, I can do it by Friday for this much, Saturday for this much, Sunday for this much. And he said, that guy, he said he could do it by tomorrow for this much. And I was like, appalled at the price. It was not as much as I had quoted higher than him. And here I'm thinking like, this guy talks so much shit about people not charging enough, and that's his price. And I was like, cool, I'll charge a little bit less and get it to you in another day. So I took the job from him, and he definitely spat shit about it on the internet. But other than that, like, I don't know. I try not to talk shit on anybody. And for the most part, at least now, like, my work feels pretty steady. So I'm not really super worried about what everybody else is doing. But all of the work is private commissions right now. So I might feel differently once events start again, if, you know, all of my emails come back like, well, so-and-so is willing to do it for less.
Just like a man.
Give us back our women's work. Take back women's work. Get your man hands out of my craft. I think we're on to something.
It's interesting that you guys kind of like collectively organize and could
more formal like, collective mm-hmm. organizing
could just become a union, like the Teamsters or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how all of that works, or if it, you know, like if it's supposed to be sort of official at some point, or if what who's for that, who's against that, how that works. Like, I don't know enough about unions other than like setting prices and having standards, which sounds great, and I should do more reading into it, I guess.
In sectors of the labor economy where participants don't have the expectation for the benefits of a more typical employee-employer relationship like artists, there remains a great deal of unstructured potential for collective organizing among its members. As this contracted work is kept outside the walls of the companies who hire them for events, the chain stitching community has the potential, given its size and intimacy, to come to agreements on strategies for providing more reliable work for themselves. Their informal mechanisms for doing so currently point to areas of opportunity for larger and less intimate groups who struggle to receive appropriate wages or respect for their labors. Thank you very much for joining me today. This has been Jared Spafford, Voices of the Gig Economy. See you next time.